tidal policies.
We have to leave it there, but part two we'll post at democracynow.org. Juan Garza, Spanish lawyer, ex-aide to Salvador Allende and Peter Kornbluh, the latest book, The Pinochet File. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's topic is Syria. To bomb or not to bomb? That is the question.
Wednesdays in Portland are a little more festive these days, thanks to Creative Collaborations and Hump Day PDX. Hump Day PDX is a street festival in Southeast Portland featuring the live music and art exhibits of creative entrepreneurs who are living on the streets. There are also family activities to enjoy, food to eat, and a beer garden for drink, all organized by Creative Collaborations in support of struggling artists and in an effort to stimulate the local neighborhood economy. The next Hump Day PDX is September 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. at Southeast 9th and Belmont in Portland. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Earlier this month, two Guantanamo hunger strikers were released from the prison camp and returned to Algeria, their home country. These are the first releases this year, and only the fifth in Obama's tenure. Join me, Linda Olsen-Osterlund, on a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Andy Worthington, author of The Guantanamo Files. We'll take a look at what brought about these releases and what it means for the future of the rest of the prisoners. That's 9:30 Thursday morning on a deeper look right here on KBOO.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Aladdin Theater, presenting an evening with Zeppelin cover band Led Zepp Again, Friday, September 13th at 8 p.m. Tickets and information for Led Zepp Again on September 13th at aladdin-theater.com.
Now you masters of war, you that build all the guns, you that build the death planes, you that build the big bombs, you that hide behind walls, you that hide behind desks, I just want you to know I can see through your mask. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. Then you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain. You fasten their triggers for others to fire. Then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion as young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can never be hurled, the fear to bring children into the world, or threaten my baby, unborn and unnamed. blood runs in your veins. How much do I know to talk out of turn? You might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. There's one thing I know, though I'm younger than even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find, when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy
well,
yeah, I don't know about that song.
Oh, yeah, I do. You know. I know about that song. I think that's a great song. I think that's an important song. I think that song was instrumental in empowering young people back way back.
Yeah,
way
but
back
what about the subtext and the implication?
What?
Well, the implication is that, you know, we go to war for profit and not for the noble reasons that we actually go to war for.
Are you crazy? I mean, is it simply that you've gone off the rails here like a Spanish train?
Listen, every single war the United States has ever been involved in has been done for the most noble of reasons.
What?
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the Iraq War under George W. Bush.
Okay, first of all, people coming...
Vietnam.
First of all, this is KBOO, 90.7 FM dial, on your dial in Portland, Oregon.
Spanish-American War.
This is the Abe and... I'll cover that in a moment.
The Westward Abe Expansion.
Shout out.
Those natives needed to be civilized.
Oh, man. Okay, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor, who's crazy today, and this is Joe Uris. And the number to call is 231-8187. I had hoped that we would be dealing with coal trains, oil trains, and pipelines today. But instead, no! We've got this stupid plan to bomb the hell out of out of Syria. It doesn't matter, Iraq, Syria, whatever. Just a bomb. And I am very discouraged, except that the Russians, of all people, together with, it looks like, John Kerry, are sitting down and trying to figure out a way to internationalize the chemical weapons in Syria. It is not going to solve the Syrian Revolutionary War, but it will keep the United States very possibly from bombing the hell out of Syria.
It's kind of nostalgic, isn't it, to have a proxy conflict with the Russians on the other side? It's just like old times.
Well, they're not. See, here's the thing. They're not exactly on the other side. You know, stabilization of the region may be a shared goal. The Russians have a real reason to fear loose chemical weapons because they've got their own problems with Muslim fundamentalists.
I think we should acknowledge right off the bat, however, that this goes far beyond the use or lack thereof of chemical weapons.
Well,
I think
yeah.
the Russians realize as clearly as we do that another war in the Middle East could set off a whole chain of dominoes that is in nobody's
set best. Off a chain of dominoes. I like the mixed more
you like that?
Metaphor.
Yeah.
A chain of dominoes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, all right. First of all, I think a little history. Probably people know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. The United States has engaged in a number of wars throughout its history, not all of which, with one major exception, I would say, were essentially expansionist, advantageous to the United States, and inhumane.
Huh.
All right. The American Revolution, you say, well, you know, that was a necessary.
Was that your major exception?
No.
No. Okay.
That's my
we'll get to that.
That's my maybe.
All right, we'll start at the beginning.
All right.
The American Revolution.
American Revolution. All right. Well, you could start before that, before we were a nation. You could start with what we call the French and Indian War, which was the bad guys, the French and the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually a 7 years war in Europe, and it was about European expansionism and imperialism.
Really kind of the First World War when you think about it.
Sort of. Okay.
All right.
I won't argue about that.
Okay.
All right. Then the American Revolution. Well, it turns out, one of the problems when you talk about these things is there's always hindsight and, you know. But given the situation, it seems like that was a rational process.
Except it wasn't really a revolution. It was more a rebellion.
Yeah, and it did create a nation state, which was an enormous compromise, which we're seeing the problems with now, actually.
Well, and, you know, if you ignore things like slavery.
Not giving women the vote.
Disenfranchisement of men or women, yeah.
And not allowing people without property to vote.
The fact that it was a landed aristocracy, it was the creation of the first modern democracy.
Yes. Okay, so then there's the War of 1812. People still don't know exactly why that was necessary.
Oh, you skipped one, though. There was the quasi-war with France during the Adams administration.
That's true. There was a quasi-war.
Undeclared naval war.
Yeah.
Which led to, this always fascinates me, Adams the second president, right?
Right.
Takes over from, George Washington, the greatest guy ever. And during the course of his one term in office, he manages to pass a couple of the most un-American laws that we've ever seen.
Alien and Sedition Acts, you
mean? Yes, indeed. Yeah. It became illegal under the Adams administration to speak ill of the government.
Well, yeah. You should have a rule like that.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, in fact, we have a rule that expressly forbids that. But that's another story.
Okay. At any rate. So, actually, the War of 1812 was, we lost it. Except one last battle in New Orleans.
Yep.
Everything was so slow, the communication was so slow, that the actual negotiation of the treaty took place before the Battle of New Orleans.
Yeah. How convenient.
Really. And that battle.
Oh, the war's over? Sorry. I didn't know.
That battle was essentially carried out under the leadership of Andrew Jackson, who came from smashing the Indians in the South and marched over to New Orleans and then smashed the British, who had the worst battle plan ever.
Yep.
Where they marched right into a reinforced army of sharpshooters from the South, and who were hidden behind cotton
Southern,
bales.
Southern sharpshooters.
Oh, I hate those.
And then there was that great song, right?
What? Oh, the Battle of New Orleans.
There wasn't near as many as there was a while ago.
And they powdered the ass of a crocodile.
Down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. Anyway, so then there's that one. Then I guess we can skip forward to our great war with Mexico.
Which was when, approximately?
1846, 47, 48.
That was a profitable one.
That was a very profitable one. We got a third of Mexico or more, actually. And we got the whole West.
Yeah, including the big prize, California.
Which we didn't know how big it would be yet then.
Well, I think we had an inkling. This always makes me laugh. Well, gold was discovered in January of 1848, and less than 2 years later, California was a state.
Well,
coincidence?
I think not. Right. But, we also were able to force the British to settle the Canada-America border in just right before we had that war, so that we could put all our attention to the southern border question, which was a total fraud. In fact, Abraham Lincoln made his name by saying, when he was a member of the House of Representatives, he said, point to the spot where American troops were attacked on American soil. And, of course, there was no such spot. But thereafter, many people who favored that war made fun of Lincoln by calling him Spot, Old Spot Lincoln.
Old Spot
was a common name for dogs in those days.
Oh.
So,
I see.
Okay.
Well, we skipped over something.
What
did
we skip?
It wasn't a war of acquisition. It was a purchase. The Louisiana Purchase. No, it's important.
Oh, before that. Purchase.
Yeah, before that, because the Louisiana Purchase effectively removed any white people we might need to kill as we expanded westward and left only natives to kill as we expanded westward.
Well, that's a point. And, our great hero, Jefferson, who kept his slaves.
He did.
Yeah. Because he wanted his wine cellar.
Right. And his library.
Yeah. Anyway, Jefferson believed and said in various publications, that all Native Americans should be moved beyond the Mississippi River.
He did.
That was his thing. All right. Yep. So now we have the Mexican War. That gives us pretty much the U.S. We made a small mistake for railroad purposes. We had to do the Gadsden Purchase.
Right.
That was a purchase.
Yeah. A little piece of Arizona and New Mexico in there.
Yeah. So we what's the – I'm just for the ease of it, I'm going to talk about – I'm not going to talk about the American Civil War.
Well, I'd say that's an exception to your dictum that – imperialism is behind all of our wars.
Right. Well, the question of the economic development of the United States was the question really being resolved there.
I'd say there's a significant human rights issue at play.
Well, duh.
Like the ownership of fellow human beings?
Yeah.
That, you can't really brush that over, can you?
I'm not going to sweep it under or over anything.
Okay.
All right. Now, the next war is the Spanish-American War.
Uh-huh.
That's a good one.
Late 1800s.
Yeah,
1898. President McKinley.
Kevin McKinley, a made-up war, basically to get a hold of a variety of ports where we could have coaling stations for
and
our fleets.
The Caribbean and the South Pacific, mostly.
And the Pacific, yeah. That would give us more access to China and Japan.
Yeah, we ended up with Cuba.
And we ended up with Cuba.
And Puerto Rico.
And Puerto Rico. And the Philippines. And the Philippines. And when the Philippines said, well, we thought this was about giving us freedom, and we don't want to be a part of the United States, they had a war against the United States that went on for years. And we used torture and waterboarding, interestingly enough, to get them to come around.
We're going to make you free whether you like it or not.
Well, and we held on to the Philippines clear until after World War II. Mm. Now, next war up, I guess.
Oh, wait. What? You move along so quickly.
Well, yeah. We only have an hour.
The Spanish-American War is noteworthy for a number of reasons, one of which is it's the best example of the power of large-scale industrial propaganda. The Hearst chain of newspapers was a prime mover behind the launch of that war. Probably we would have not gone to war without the complicity of Hearst and his various papers.
That is possibly true.
Okay.
Probably true.
Yeah.
Maybe true.
The modern analog to the modern media machine.
Yes. Yes. Definitely the analog there, too. All right. Analog. That's a good word.
It is a good
word. Anyway, all right. So then comes one of my favorites, World War One.
Why is it one of your favorites?
Because it's one of the stupidest wars in history.
Well, it's pretty stupid.
Everybody stumbles into it, and it becomes a butchery of incredible intensity in which chemical weapons are routinely
used. That's true. And airplanes.
And aeroplanes.
Aeroplanes.
Yeah. That's very cool. So that's the first chemical war. Then comes the war which I believe was absolutely necessary, unfortunately, which was the war against fascism and Imperial Japan, which is World War II.
Yeah.
Because they attacked us. Among other things.
Yeah, among other things. You could argue that was the last time we really knew who the good guys were and who the bad guys were.
Well, it was the last such war, and it lined up the permanent arrangement of the Soviet bloc. You know, a lot of Americans don't know that when toward the end of World War II, we were very concerned about defeating Japan. Europe was clearly going to fall. The Soviets were moving very quickly toward there was a race to Berlin, and the Soviets were ahead in the race. And essentially, we made a deal with Joseph Stalin, the dictator of Russia, the Soviet Union, in which the Russians would attack the Japanese the day after the day that Europe surrendered, that Germany surrendered. And we also agreed to allow the Soviets to dominate Eastern Europe. People don't know that that was a deal we made, but it was. And the reason why we made it was because we were terrified of the Japanese resistance. It was really believed that it would be a real war and then a guerrilla war lasting for years and years and years.
And probably would have been.
And, of course, the resolution of that problem was the atomic bomb, which put us in a position, and very soon the Soviet Union, very soon Great Britain, et cetera, which put us all in a position of actually destroying the world through weapons of war.
Which was the goal all along, right?
Yeah. Now, from that point on, for both propagandistic and I don't know whether you want to call them real reasons or not, for a variety of reasons, there was this ideological struggle between the so-called socialist bloc, which was not as socialist as one would hope, but was a dictatorial system under the leadership of Stalin and later of the Soviet Union in general, a system which did give certain services to people, but at a high price in terms of freedom and opportunity and technology development. That period of time, the Cold War, as it's known, led directly to the notion that we had to stop the advance of the Red Menace. And I can remember when I was a kid, newspapers would have on the Sunday section a map of the world showing the red advance, the reds coming in. Ooh, the reds had taken a lot of the world.
Like blood seeping across the globe.
Yeah, oh, nasty red. And of course, we part of our deal that we made with the Soviets was to create proxy states in Korea, a North Korean proxy state and a South Korean proxy state. And the North Korean proxy state, pretty much on its own, but with a kind of tacit understanding by the Soviets and the Chinese, invaded South Korea and damn near took the whole peninsula.
Yeah.
But we got in there, and then we had MacArthur as the head of our troops, and he decided, along with a group called the China Lobby in Congress, to use this as a reason to attack China and the Soviet Union, because they didn't have the kind of nuclear forces we did or the armies we did, we thought. However, It was a real disaster. The Chinese warned us. The Russians told us, you know, don't go past the 38th parallel, which was the original line. We did as we got close to the Alu River and started bombing, strafing at least, in China. The Chinese decided to have a quote-unquote volunteer army. This was the army that they had built and won their revolution with in 1949. They had that army volunteering to go sneakily into the mountains of the mountain spine of Korea and attack the Americans and damn near win the war. And then there was a big, big struggle, which ended up with approximately the 38th parallel, which is still the case, and we still haven't ended that war.
And that's exactly where the line was when the war started.
Well, pretty close. It's a little different, but it's pretty close. Huh. Yeah, yeah. So there was that one. Then, because we still had this unified theory of the Soviet menace, we didn't acknowledge later that the Soviet Union and China had incredible splits, and we acted as if they were unified. And when Ho Chi Minh, a Democrat who was a socialist, continued to fight against initially the French and then later the United States in Vietnam. We got ourselves caught in Vietnam with lies by the administration of Johnson about the alleged attacks from the North. And we waged a murderous weapons of mass destruction war, including chemical weapons, Agent Orange and tear gas and so on. I'm emphasizing this, using these weapons. By the way, World War I was the first to use chemical weapons a lot. I want to make that clear. So chemical weapons were not new to the bad guys, quote-unquote, or the good guys, us. And in the end, we lost Vietnam. We lost the war. There were all kinds of reasons for losing it, public opinion, tactical issues, the fact that it's really hard to run a war far, far away and still have an economy. Mm-hmm. And the Indochinese were very smart. They waged a guerrilla war, and it went on and on and on and on. Finally, we acknowledged that it wasn't working, and now Vietnam is a big trade partner of ours. Okay, well, so that leads us up to a bunch of little wars that we've had since then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Little wars, and the most recent little war is the one that looks like it might happen right now with Syria. But the point is that in all of this, the only war that you could call reasonably justified, that is a concept of a just war being weird anyway, is World War II. Everything else is kind of adventurism and imperialism and a bunch of stuff like
Civil
that.
Civil War, maybe.
Maybe the Civil War. I agree that freeing the slaves was a real thing to do.
Well, I'm glad you concede that.
I concede that, yeah.
Glad you make that concession.
But I think if we hadn't seized the northern part of Mexico, very likely the rapid industrialization of the North would have rendered slavery pretty moot.
So here's what we'd like to accomplish today.
What do we want to accomplish today? We already wasted half the show.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I want to hear from you on a couple of topics.
Okay.
First of all, can you make a case for any war being that we've been involved in being justified between World War II and now?
Yeah.
And secondly, is this description of the United States primarily as an imperial power, is that a complete and appropriate description of our culture?
Okay.
Can we be summed up as an imperial power?
Well, I'm going to defend that position.
Okay.
I really believe we are.
I think
are.
There's more. I think it's an incomplete description.
Okay.
Well, let's go to the phones.
All right.
Brian, good morning.
Hi. Short answer to your first point, no. Never, ever. And in fact, here's a little quote from one of my favorite U.S. journalists, Izzy Stone.
Ah, Isaac Stone. Yeah, I know him. I mean,
yeah,
I know him.
All governments lie, but disaster lies in wait for countries whose officials smoke the same hashish they give out. I think that's brilliant, and it describes what's going on right now. I mean, you know, that it's been proven that they lied their way into, you know, post 9/11 Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're using the same old
yellow cake
script and hashish to try and get us into Syria. And you know, the blowback will be inevitable, and it could drag the whole region and even beyond into it. But here's one of my, and since you were talking history, this, and you know, it fits in with your, is this an empire? Well, I think it's becoming the corporate state empire. You know, and you know what, that's a nice word for.
Yeah, we do.
And, okay, well, the only time this country has ever been a democracy was before the Constitution. It was the Great Iroquois Confederacy. That was the only participatory democracy that's ever existed on this planet. And it was admired very much by the slave-owning framers of the Constitution, but they turned it around into a representative democracy, which are a non-democracy in which only a few white slave-owning, land-owning men got to vote. And, you know, the Electoral College here is based on the ownership of slaves per each voter gave them a fraction of a vote, mm-hmm. not for the slaves, but for the slave owners. And you're still stuck with that ridiculous, idiotic premise for the Electoral College, which has seen so many, dimwits Bush for a start, and so many inept presidents. So that's my little bit of you. You know, I study the history of this country and any country I choose to live in just because I feel obliged to. And I'm not a citizen, but they take my taxes, so by God, I'm going to shout.
Good.
So anyway, I want you to, and I'm really glad that Amy Goodman today chose to commemorate the murder of Allende by none other than the sainted Henry Kissinger, who should be doing time or have faced the gallows in Chile instead of getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, the Nobel Peace Prize becomes somewhat of a joke, and giving it to Obama virtually the day he became president was weird.
They need to give it to Chelsea Manning and Malala of Pakistan to give it back some credibility, but I'm not holding my breath on that one.
Okay.
But anyway, just think that the natives that we went ahead, our ancestors went ahead and slaughtered, were their great democracy was the our former sainted framers of the Constitution aspired to, but screwed it up right royally along the way, including slaughtering the natives. Anyway, that's my little rant for today, and I'll get off.
All right, thanks very much, foreigner.
Very much.
Foreigner.
Yeah,
foreigner.
Scotsman.
No, he makes some very good points. I wanted to add some news. People may not know, but it looks like the Russians, oh no, not the Russians, are going to save the day and pull the fat out of the fire for Obama.
Yeah, it was really interesting the way this is playing out. Essentially, the Russians proposed that in lieu of military strikes from the West, that Syria agree to first have its chemical weapons stockpiles inspected and further commit to getting rid of them all and joining the International Chemical Weapons Convention.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing.
It is a very good thing.
But, you know, you can ask yourself, well, was this Obama's plan all along?
No.
You know, he talks about, well, we're going to go to war. Then he goes to Congress and says, well, should we go to war? Let's go to war. And the Congress goes, meanwhile, John Kerry is kind of talking with the Russians and maybe somehow backdoor chatting with the Syrians. And suddenly we have a very reasonable approach.
Indeed. There's some interesting subtext going on here, too. The Syrian foreign minister was in Russia at the time this deal was floated. And the language he used to comment on it essentially was a tacit admission that, yes, Syria does have a stockpile of chemical weapons, which is something they hadn't admitted before.
Yeah, and you know, the notion, Assad is really locked into a system where the military and parts of his family do actually control the pseudo-democracy of Syria. And in fact, it's really unclear about how much movement he has in all of this.
Well, I think he's a king in all but name, and his family is essentially a royal ruling family.
Yeah, but the military there are the big players. They're the powerful forces.
Oh.
I mean, that's something I've read and I believe to be true.
Okay.
Anyway, all right, we want to hear from you. What is to be done? Do you think that there is going to be a war after all? Do you think that the fat has been pulled out of the fire? Is it possible to avoid this insane behavior? Or are we going to war? To war?
Also, is there a U.S. military action since the end of the Second World War that you believe to be justified?
Yeah.
I'd like to hear people's opinions on that.
Yeah. Okay.
And thirdly.
Thirdly?
Is the description of the United States as an imperial power, which it indubitably is, is that a sufficient and complete description of our nation and our culture?
Well, we're good. We're spreading democracy. I don't understand.
Well, I would also argue that we've seen here a marvelous flowering of human liberty.
Flowering of
yes.
human liberty?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Or deflowering, as Engineer Steve just whispered in our ears. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Harvey, good morning.
Hi there. Great show today.
Thank you.
Well, war to me is like the world catching a cold. You know, when you catch a cold, you have all these viruses in your body that start spreading, and so your immune system sends out all these antibodies that sort of like take it over and fight it, and in the process, you get a lot of mucus, like dead cells and all that. That's what it is. Every time a war breaks out somewhere on the planet, it's like some population catching a cold, and then it has to be, it has to be put to rest and fanned back into good health. And so I'm saying, you know, we have to, where the internet may be the inoculation against these colds. This connectivity that we're all into now around the world, our nervous system is stretched around the planet, and in a sense we're seeing the rebellion away from despotic dictators away toward more liberal, open societies, as the technology creates ties us all together. We're all more entangled than ever. And I'd like to speak about the connection of war to the war in Syria to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You know, the corporations, they love any form of distraction away from, and the government, away from like the scandals, like the NSA scandal. And so if we have a war that'll sweep, you know, all the news on fracking, Fukushima, global warming, it'll all be swept away because of the war on Syria. And under the cover of war, they'll pass the XL pipeline, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So war, like, the media just loves war. That's why they're selling it, the corporate media. That's why they're selling it to the people, because this is the big trick, you know, is this distraction. It's all about distraction. I don't know if anybody's ever seen the movie Wag the Dog with Dustin Hoffman.
It's a great film.
Yeah, it's a different scandal than the film, but it's the same scenario, I feel. And this is like a manufactured war. And, of course, the military-industrial complex, they're getting a bit skittish these days. You know, if you don't have a good war now and then, you know, their budgets are up to question. So they need a war. They need to flex their muscles. You know, they got their hammers ready. And it serves everybody in both corporations and government to run this war. But at the same time, they're not prepared for our connectivity, and it scares them all. So it's an interesting thing going on right now. But I think there's a good chance that our collective intelligence can figure out how to get past this war. And in a sense, that to me is an intelligence test. And if we say no to war, then we can use our collective intelligence to put off not only this disaster, but others.
That was a fantastic call. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For that.
Thank you.
That, well, there was a lot in there. I love the metaphor. I love the metaphor about the internet being the humanity's nervous system encircling the globe. That's a fantastic metaphor.
Eh.
I don't know. See, I've often wondered about that. We've never really seen anything like the internet before. We've never seen such potential for the complete democratization of ideas and the free exchange of information. Could this be a wild card for humanity that helps us avoid some of the massive pitfalls that are stretching out in front of us? Is this a possibility? I think it is. Right now, unfortunately, I think the internet is as much a means of fomenting disinformation as it is for fomenting helpful information, but it's still unlike anything we've ever seen before, and I think we have really yet to see its full impact on the collective discourse, which is now wider and broader than it ever has been.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll see. That was a really interesting phone call.
Well, that's an interesting phone call.
All right. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, professor and writer Victoria Banyard speaks on sexual violence. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints focuses on the worsening situation in Syria with an on-the-ground report from Damascus, a look at how a strike would affect other countries in the region, and a closer look at Obama's so-called smoking gun, proof that the Syrian government used chemical weapons against its own people. At 11 on stage and studio host D. May Roberts talks with Time-Based Art Festival artistic director Angela Maddox and dancer Linda Austin about the festival, which begins later this week. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Merrillhurst Art Gym curator Terry Hopkins, who will retire in January after 33 years directing the gallery. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
And I want to add something. If you're a listener, presumably you are, you wouldn't be hearing me, and you have not joined KBOO, or you are a person with a little extra cash hanging out, we are a station in crisis, as are many, many parts of traditional media. And it would really be helpful if you joined. A $40 membership is the appropriate amount if you're a person who can afford it. And more is even better. $10 a month would, $120 would really make things good. It's important now to put up, because otherwise the station may have to shut up.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. True.
It is true. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. James, good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, hi, James.
Jefferson did not own his slaves. The Bank of England.
It's the Bank of England guy.
That's strike one, James. Keep going.
Okay, and then imperial powers paid Native Americans to go after the colonists, number two.
Well, that's true.
Okay.
That's actually true.
Yep.
Imperial powers also used their might, their economic might, to facilitate the division between the North and the South and get us into the Civil War.
I'm not sure I quite understand the argument there, but okay.
They did.
All right.
That must be
true.
And then the imperial powers established a central bank and a direct tax on the American
so
people.
So the real problem...
Hold on, please let me finish. The imperial powers established the central bank, and then they used the full faith and credit of the American people to start World War One.
The imperial powers.
Yes, I am telling you this.
Who are
imperial powers? Did this?
Can you identify those imperial powers, please?
They are referred to as the Illuminati.
The Illuminati. Oh, okay. Wow, we win every contest ever.
All right, James. I want to get back to your first point, which was that Jefferson didn't own his slaves. The Bank of England owned his slaves. Are you absolving slave owners of responsibility for their actions?
I am saying that was a different time, and we cannot use our view of reality and compare it to their view of reality.
Right, because reality is so much different.
Considering that Jefferson, pretty much freed the world. And of course, we're all slaves again, but Jefferson and Madison, they put out a plan to marginalize the ruling class, and we have been bamboozled by the ruling class and have allowed them to enslave us again.
Okay. James, it's always good to hear from you. I know.
Yes, you are actually through today.
Okay.
Well, there it is, the Illuminati.
The Illuminati.
And it wasn't the slave owner's fault. It was the Bank of England.
I always thought that I was part of the Illuminati.
No.
Well,
you're not handsome enough.
Wait, I won't argue about that, but surely I'm part of the Illuminati. All right, 231-8187.
Please save us from
Please
ourselves.
Please call us. We're talking about Syria, and we do want to hear from you. Is this Cheryl?
Cheryl, good morning.
Yeah, it is. And good morning, guys. What a good program. I just quickly am going to address the Jefferson issue. Jefferson, in an original draft, did include freeing the slaves, but the South wouldn't agree to go along with it. So it was struck. I have documentation about that. What I want to address today is that I think that Obama is a genius. He's pulled things off in a dire moment this way before, and this is how I think he's handled it. He's used an overt threat of the bombing as a ploy to get Assad to back down and cooperate. And how he did this is he made this threat, set it out there, and then he slowed down and said, just a moment, let's see what the Congress thinks, let's see what people think, giving time to Assad to get a little freaked out, a little more wondering, is this serious, talk to Russia, backroom discussions, and so on. And so now it's coming around that maybe this isn't going to happen. And as a matter of fact, it was announced on the news this morning that Russian president, I'm not sure, Putin and Obama discussed last week this very issue, so it's already been in the mix. So second thing I want to say, and the fellow, I didn't catch his name before, James, he was talking about something that I really think is going to happen.
Harvey,
sharp fellow. I think the systems of government, the whole system of government, period, are in their fighting last days because they aren't really for us, the people, but are protecting boundaries. And the internet is going to sweep governments out probably before any of us really realize that's a possibility. The ruling class, I think government, is in its last days, metaphorically speaking, euphemistically, I guess, speaking. So I think the internet is the new government of the world. It's changing everyone. And yes, there will be some sifting, there will be fighting. But I also think that Harvey has a point, that it's very likely that there will be less war because people now are communicating to each other rather than through a peacock nation of club goers that call themselves senators and congressmen. So it's time for change, and it's going to happen. And, of course, there will be a lot of dust, but I think it's going to work out.
Well, thank you very much for that perception. I hope you're right. I don't think you're right. But I do love the idea of a peacock.
Sure. Well, yeah, who doesn't like a nice peacock?
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You know, peacocks have ugly feet and they have an ugly sound, but they're very pretty.
They are very, very pretty. Now, is this all transpiring according to President Obama's plan? Well, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. I think there's a tendency among Obama supporters to believe and give him credit for playing some sort of game of nine-dimensional chess and believing that he is several moves ahead of everybody else at any given time. I think that's giving him a little too much credit.
Well, you know, I actually am of two minds here. I think that it is possible that the State Department and Obama made this dire threat and made it credible to the extent, like, you know, whoa, not a war, with the view that the Russians and the Syrians really could pull the fat out of the fire rather than have this thing happen. Making it credible, making it real, making it seem like it was about to happen tomorrow is pretty clever if that really was the plan.
That's true. Where I have trouble with that line of thinking is this. They were threatening something that the consequences of which extend far beyond what the immediate results in Syria.
Yeah.
The beginning of another round of possibly protracted military engagements in the Middle East would be disastrous. It would be something, a conflagration that would spread far beyond Syria, that would possibly pull in the Russians, possibly pull in the Chinese, bleed over into surrounding nation states. It would have been disastrous. And so that, I mean, if Obama's playing a game of chicken, that's a pretty damn high-stakes game of chicken right there.
Well, I don't really believe that Obama is that brilliant, and I really don't believe that John Kerry is that brilliant, and I really don't believe that people know what they're doing in all of this, except it is puzzling. The Russians certainly have a chance to come out smelling like a rose in all of this.
It's true. And you know what's made me laugh during all of this?
What?
A laugh bitterly and ironically.
Bitter, ironic laugh.
Yeah, are the Republicans. Because there are now about a half dozen Republican senators who, over the past several months, have publicly and rather forcefully advocated for a military response to the Syrian situation. But as soon as President Obama came out in favor of it, they have shifted their position. These are some of the most hawkish Republican members of the Senate. So they must really hate that guy.
Well, yeah, but then there's John McCain, who's never seen a country he didn't want to bomb. I want to announce something because it's important. This Wednesday, that's tomorrow, at 6 p.m. on the Hawthorne Bridge and other bridges, bring signs and candles and please respect traffic, pedestrians and bikes, as everyone stays safe. We do not have a permit for this. Wednesday, September 11th at 6 p.m. until twilight on the Hawthorne Bridge or any bridge, north or south, east, west, or middle. Bring a candle or a sign to protest the very great possibility of a war in Syria.
Cool.
I thought that's something to do.
All right. And we'll repeat that before the end of the show.
Okay. Will we? All right.
Yes. Let's go back to the phones. Mitch, good morning.
Good morning. You guys were very alert there to sniff out the Illuminati guy.
Well, that's the Illuminati, man. I've been a member of them for years. I joined when I was a kid.
Anybody can be a member of the Illuminati. I was, for from grade school on, the moment I got my first bus pass and library card, and I had to take it and get it laminated, I was initiated into the Laminati. I just wanted you to know that.
That's good. That's good. You're a founder of the Plastic Army.
Absolutely. And I wanted to say that I'm with Joe, who doesn't believe that Obama is this sharp or Kerry, and that the way that Kerry has acted from the time he's assumed his duties as Secretary of State leads me to believe that had he actually snatched victory from the jaws of defeat there with W. Bush, that not much would have been different in the course of our history. And that Obama, if you look at every one of his policies, most especially on the financial front, and don't forget he came to office in the middle of a financial crisis, Mr. Obama actually can be depicted as a Romney stealth candidate. Ooh. From his health care plan to his financial advisors, to Penny Pritzker, to who he's looking to push into the head of the Federal Reserve, which actually funds these wars, all the way down the line. And I think that's a paradigm that we need to adjust to and act accordingly. I'm not sure how to act accordingly since we're a two-party system.
I think that analogy only goes so far. I think you can argue that President Obama is far more similar to his Republican presidential opponents, both of them, than we might like him to be. But to call him to imply that he's a clone of George W. Bush or a stealth Romney, I don't think that quite paints the complete picture.
Well, I'd like to say that in terms of his campaigning on fealty to Main Street rather than Wall Street and his policies, that he has been pure bait and switch.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I'm with you on that.
I agree with that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hey,
thanks
a lot for the call.
Thank you for the call.
Well, whether or not he's a genius or a sloppy, unprepared to be president guy, which is sort of how I think of him now, being kind, certainly the possibility of an agreement that limits chemical weapons with the involvement of the Russians is a good thing.
I agree. Yes.
Not having a bombing war, however surgical it is, against the poor Syrian people, a good thing.
That makes me roll my eyes. Listen, using the adjective surgical in conjunction with bombs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well. Right, let's go back to the phones. 503-231-8187. Pam.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Thank you for this discussion in general. I would just like to remind people who say that soldiers are required for armies. Well, misallocated taxes are also required for wars.
Ain't that the truth?
Yes. And so I would like to urge people to check into redirecting one's taxes. I'll give a website in a moment.
Okay. You mean tax disobedience?
I do. And this would be federal taxes. Mm-hmm. I personally don't, because we have more success on a state and city level. Gosh, it's a big subject, folks. It's not a permanent, I'm not advocating this as a permanent solution, but I do think it is a step along the way of actually regaining power within,
let me be clear. You want to have people withhold that portion of their federal taxes that would go to defense? Is that the idea?
That's the idea, but that's only the first step. The second step to that is to not merely withhold these taxes, because we do need taxes, come on, to pay for things that human people need. Just reallocate them. Join with your friends. We have a group here in Portland that does this every year, and reallocate these withheld federal taxes to useful groups, such as community clinics, such as education, such as food, places that feed people, such as Right to Dream 2, folks, which we have done in the past, and Dignity Village, and veterans groups, my God, that really do good to help the veterans.
Well, let me ask you to give the website, because
I will do that.
Okay.
NWTRCC.
NWTRCC.
NWTR.org.
.org, okay.
And that stands for National War Tax Resistance Coordinating Committee.
Okay.
Now, I got to, you know, I think I'm with you in spirit here, but on a practical level, evasion of taxes carries with it a penalty.
It
and if it's done on a large enough scale, it's actually a crime and even a felony.
Well, large enough scale here, we're talking about real people that don't make a lot of money, okay?
Yeah.
you might owe, at the most, a couple hundred. the other thing is you can choose how much of your taxes you wish to withhold, taxes owed. Some people choose 100%. Some people choose the few odd cents that is just on their, you know, the federal 3% federal excise on their phone bill. It's you can be symbolic as you wish. It's a personal decision. But you're right. There are penalties, possible penalties, regardless of whether you're withholding a dollar or $1,000. It's civil disobedience. And every time you do a civil disobedience, you must know the possible consequences and make a decision. Do I accept these? Do I do something else? You can also support people who do this by perhaps joining in the April 15th actions that are always done. There's a visibility action on the bridges in Portland every morning on or as close as we can get to April 15th. I mean, that's something you can do to support us. You can also contribute $5 or $10 to one of the two or three groups that we redirect to every year. The thing is, our taxes, our federal taxes, are definitely misallocated. We all know this in so many ways.
Well, and there's another irony here, of course, which is that the very rich pay very few taxes.
That is true.
And I think that's that injustice itself would warrant harsh attitudes toward the IRS.
Well, this is not. I'm not, you know, really targeting the IRS. I'm targeting Congress for misallocation.
All right.
But, you know, but that's a big discussion. And I know there are other people that really want to get on the air. So, God, I really appreciate this.
Okay. Sure. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much. I want to again announce that there's going to be actions tomorrow, Wednesday, starting at 6 p.m. on all the bridges, but particularly the Hawthorne Bridge, protesting the very great possibility of a war against Syria.
Yeah, I suppose withholding one's taxes is a is both a symbolic and a practical way to object to the allocation of resources by the federal government.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, and perhaps an effective way to protest a war. Another effective way to protest a war is since we have an all-volunteer military, except for the mercenaries we hire, you know, people could just not volunteer.
Well, we don't have time for this whole other topic, but I think that one of the big strategic errors made by the anti-war movement back in the 60s and 70s, anti-Vietnam War movement, was to oppose the draft. I think the draft should have not been opposed. I think there should still be a draft. I think that every man and woman in America, regardless of their physical condition, should in some manner be forced to serve to serve for a couple of years, and the reward would be education, etc. Now, in order for that, if that happened, it would be harder to have an army of the sort that we have to go to war in places like Afghanistan and Syria, and for that matter, Iraq.
That's very true.
Well, but I just am grousing.
Yeah, that's true. You're good at that.
We want to hear from people. 231-8187. We're talking about Syria.
Tomas, good morning.
Hi. Regarding Syria and the chances of going to war, I think it's still going to happen. I imagine that after Russia announced that they were going to try to get the chemical weapons out of Syria, I bet you that John Kerry is in a back room screaming and cursing and punching walls because this has been in the plans. I mean, before the Iraq War started, we had a chant that I cannot say over the radio, but that regarded attacking Syria. I mean, mm-hmm. We knew back then this has been part of the U.S. imperialist plan for at least a decade. And really, Syria has been on the books for a lot longer than that. Obviously, that was planned out long before 2003. So, like, regarding, like, whether Obama is...
You mean you're talking about the new American century sort of stuff?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's like the long-term plan of how the United States is going to maintain global hegemony, right? And domination over the economy of the whole world. So Obama's doing the same thing. You know, he might be taking a slightly different path than Mitt Romney might have taken, or John McCain might have taken, a little bit less gung-ho, although they've been quite gung-ho about going to war with Syria and using the same exact kind of rhetoric that the Bush administration used to get us into war with Iraq. I mean, the fact that John Kerry every day pleading, I mean, almost down on his knees begging people to believe him that we actually have this intelligence and that we promise you that we have it. Please just let us go to war.
Well, one of the ironies is that, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I think the American people were really burned by the lies and deceits of the Bush administration bringing us to the war in Iraq and the action in Afghanistan. And I think that people now are much more dubious about going to war. And I mean, this is the one possibly good thing about the insanity of the Bush wars, that people just aren't buying it the way they used to.
Sure, but there's also not the opposition to Obama. I mean, where are all the liberal celebrities and other famous people who came out strongly against the last war? They're not around. They don't want to say anything against Obama. And people want to have this idea, like the woman earlier, that Obama is this brilliant genius and his whole plan was not to go to war. No, that's false. His whole plan was to go to war. This is exactly what the plan was. It's just that the Russians threw this in. I think the United States is still going to find a reason to go to war. There's going to be another chemical weapons attack or something else is going to happen. 5,000 civilians are going to be executed in public in broad daylight in front of television cameras, or something is going to happen. I don't have any idea what, but they're going to find a reason to go to war because they are set on this, and I am firm on that.
Well, I hope you're wrong.
All right. Thank
Thanks
you.
For the call. Yeah. 231-8187. We're talking about Syria and the possibility of not having a war because the Russians and the Syrians are willing to maybe internationalize and control the weapons of the nerve gas and other forms of weapons of mass destruction that the Syrians, apparently they're now acknowledging, do have.
Who's next? Francis, good morning.
I listened to the interview with Saad last night, Charlie Rose.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Had an interview with him, and it's the same story, obviously, and he reminded us of the stories that were told about Hussein in Iran,
mm-hmm.
about the weapons of mass destruction and how those were lies, and he also spoke of the depleted uranium that's now all over the place in Iraq.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a weapon of the United States.
And he asked a question, whose red line is this? And Charlie Rose kind of hesitated in responding, but he said, well, the president drew a line. He said, the president of the United States drew a red line. I mean, he pretty much brought to our attention that we are talking about a sovereign country and unilaterally bombing it because of things going on in his own country. And he spoke a lot about the outside influences in the so-called rebels and that they are really Al-Qaeda factions, and, you know, he had a lot of things to say. What I would like to believe is what one of your callers said earlier, that the Internet is going to allow communications that have not occurred previously in previous wars, and that people are going to talk about these things. And I would like to believe that President Obama is in a position that I perceive he is in the hold of these corporate warmongers and is trying very delicately to whatever threats they have put on him to maneuver. And I would like to believe that when he said that the Congress is the representative of the people, and he acknowledged that the people are not in favor of this bombing, and he said, let the representatives of the people have the debate. And they are having it now, so we'll see what happens.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
I think it's really interesting. I cannot make a judgment, and I will not make a judgment about Obama's intent in all of this. I don't think he's a brilliant statesman, and I'm not impressed with his red line nonsense. I think that the United States has used chemical weapons. I don't know whether you call depleted uranium a chemical weapon exactly, but the use of depleted uranium is an unacknowledged war crime as far as I'm concerned. And we are the guys who do that.
I don't believe that depleted uranium is covered under the chemical weapons.
No, it isn't. I know it isn't, but, you know. Oh, wait, we're out of time.
Excellent conversation today, everyone.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
And I'm going to just add this. Oppose any war unless the United States is attacked. for real.
We'll be back at you next week.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nazis. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Radio, in association with Radio Lost and Founds and the Media Net Web, present a film this coming Thursday, September 12th, at Portland's historical Clinton Street Theater. This month, we feature a film titled Sonic Outlaws, about the Bay Area recording and performance group Negative Lands.
Yeah, we broke the law right now at this very instant, didn't we?
And their controversial album, U2.
He was a little dog named Snuggle.
Thursday, September 12th. For more information, go to kboo.fm on the right-hand side of our homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, professor and writer Victoria Banyard speaks on sexual violence. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints focuses on the worsening situation in Syria with an on-the-ground report from Damascus, a look at how a strike would affect other countries in the region, and a closer look at Obama's so-called smoking gun proof that the Syrian government used chemical weapons against its own people. At 11, on stage and studio, host D-May Roberts talks with Time-Based Art Festival Artistic Director Angela Maddox and dancer Linda Austin about the festival, which begins later this week. And at 11:30, on Art Focus, host Ava Lake interviews Merrillhurst Art Gym curator Terry Hopkins, who will retire in January after 33 years directing